You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Joining me for film each week is Josh Nelson. Filmology.com is his website. He's also on Filmology at Twitter, and he has a radio show with some colleagues on another radio station on Monday nights. Josh, welcome.
Good afternoon.
But we'll all be listening to Lindy. Look, let's talk about Mission Impossible, the fifth installment of the franchise. If you've got an idea of people who you're uncomfortable with, maybe you saw them do an interview and you think, you're not a nice person, but I love your work, I'd be interested to hear from you. 1300 222 774. I will get to your texts soon. Josh.
Where do you start with Rogue Nation?
Yes. So, firstly, do you recall the plot? You saw it recently, didn't you? I only saw it on the weekend.
I saw it yesterday.
I'm not sure I could actually replay the plot in words. Either way.
Well, this entire franchise, I feel a bit like that. I've been up until this point quite lukewarm on the Mission Impossible films. As you mentioned before, this is the fifth installment. Each film with a different director, going back to the original, well, not the original, but the original of the film franchise, is directed by Brian De Palma. And I think that's one of the interesting aspects about these films, is that even with the different directors, they do something quite different to a degree.
Mm. Perhaps, they're certainly stylistically different, each of them, aren't they?
Absolutely. I mean, the second film was John Woo. Not a great film, but it looked good. There was a lot of slow motion in that film.
A lot of doves and pigeons.
Indeed. Yeah. Look, I think the plot of this film really isn't central to whether you're going to like the film or not, I don't think. It really
is.
No, I mean,
it's got nothing to do with it.
It's a pretty...
But they're not about plot, these films.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the plot is sufficient enough in one regard. It's an espionage plot. Mm. We have the agents that have been introduced in previous films, led by Ethan Hunt, played by Tom Cruise. They are the IMF, the Impossible Mission Force. And in this one, they're dealing with the so-called Syndicate, which are a kind of substitute Chaos / Hydra / you know.
But yet again, it's the agent gone rogue.
Indeed. In fact, yeah. In this case, it's the entire team that have been disavowed. And they're up against their...
You only ever hear disavowed in a spy film, don't
I know.
You? It only comes up in a spy film.
Yeah. Or PhD theses. Mm. You've got Alec Baldwin as the head of the CIA who wants to shut them down, and they're sort of trying to fight against him and also hunt down this syndicate, which no one else believes in. I mean, that's about as kind of, you know, loose
as
you
need. The CIA says you're hunting ghosts. It's rubbish.
Yeah. You're creating your own enemies to justify your own presence. Right. I mean, I think it might be a bit of a stretch to say that this film is deeply political in that regard. It doesn't really explore those political ideas.
But it's not really deeply political, because even though it suggests that we can... I mean, we're just talking about Iraq. Even though it suggests you can set things in motion that produce these horrible things, you still have at your core a good, decent... thoroughly trustworthy, thoroughly ultimately intelligent, clever core group of goodies who are always going to come and save the day. But you can't expect too much political analysis in a Mission Impossible film.
Yeah, ideologically, yeah. These films aren't critical of the American centre at all.
Look, let's play a little clip where this is the classic setup, isn't it? Of the classic, I think this is one of the tropes. They've got to have a impossible to get into building. And you've got, this is Simon Pegg,
yep.
Who reprises his role. And you've got Tom Cruise, and they're just talking, you know, all right, how do we get into this underwater vault and do something that we need to do? Have a listen.
You have to get through 12 feet of concrete and 70,000 gallons of pressurized water without any metal.
No oxygen tanks.
Benji, stand by to receive.
Ethan, you ready?
Important point. If you haven't opened that hatch after 2.5 minutes, we're both dead.
No, no, no.
Ethan, do you copy?
Ethan, abort!
Abort now!
So hopefully that gives you some idea. I want to say this, though, Josh. I'm not a fan of the first four films at all, really.
Right.
They really didn't get me going. However, they carried off one thing in this. Even though the plot is completely preposterous and I can't recollect the plot, in each moment... it kind of comes off as real. It kind of comes off as believable and pretty engaging, doesn't it? Now, in the moment, it's good.
I was really surprised at how much I enjoyed this film, actually. In acknowledging that this film is basically a series of set pieces, those set pieces in and of themselves are pretty extraordinary.
Yeah,
in fact, there's a set piece involving a performance of Turandot at a Viennese opera house, and it's... I mean, I
think it's such a trope, isn't it?
Yeah.
Opera, you know, culmination of the opera is going to be the big, you know, the big penultimate violent act, you know.
Well, a few critics have likened this film or aspects of this film to a Hitchcock thriller. in some regards. Not the chase sequences necessarily, right. but I think this is the sequence that seems to inspire that response in critics, because it does feel like a Hitchcock thriller. You have a figure who we assume is going to be assassinated, but then there's three shooters who have all constructed their weapons through very intricate means, and then we have Ethan Hunt in the middle of them while the opera's still going and the audience is unawares of, you know, of the presence of these sort of snipers. It's a wonderful sequence. In fact, it's almost one of my favourite sequences in cinema this year in terms of the way in which it's structured, it's edited, it builds to a wonderful crescendo, and there's such great payoff. And this film works, I think, because the set pieces, as eclectic and varied as they are wonderfully executed.
Christopher's the motorbike chase scene.
And all those chase sequences, there's a motorbike, there's a car, there's a chase on foot, there's an underwater chase, there's a heist sequence. I mean, this is like tick the boxes, not just of one type of action film, but all of them. And it runs the gamut and pulls them off with very little CGI, with one or two exceptions, in a really exhilarating manner.
It really does look like it's Tom Cruise on the motorbike. I'm not sure that it is, but it really looks like it. So it's entirely believable. And yeah, it's got that real... I remember watching Ronan, which I've mentioned quite a few times, the Robert De Niro car chase film, but the... It feels, as bizarre as it, because it's completely unreal, but it feels very real, this film, in each sort of moment by moment. Then you walk out, sort of think about it and think, that was just completely ridiculous.
And it's not Fast and the Furious. I mean, when we reviewed that, that just felt like cartoon cars speeding through a VFX landscape. This actually does have a grittiness to it, which is what makes this film so engaging. But the other thing that makes this film engaging, and we haven't even mentioned her, and I think she shines above the rest of the cast, is the presence of Rebecca Ferguson in the lead female role. She's a Swedish actress playing a British intelligence who's sort of potentially sided with someone within the syndicate. So it's that duplicitous
potential baddie
woman, female agent. And unlike so many of the other Mission Impossible films, and particularly the Bond films, she's not just there for eye candy. She quite literally kicks ass in this film.
Kicks ass, helps save the day in one moment, not over-sexualized, quite a strong... character. Doesn't quite have another conversation with another woman about something that isn't.
It's not Bechdel test territory.
However, for an action flick, very strong female.
She's not just there to reinforce this idea that Tom Cruise is a heterosexual agent. Yeah. I mean, she really is there to bring a sense of sexiness to the film, but a strength. She's not just the token love interest. Yeah. And that was so refreshing. And it's something that Bond hasn't been able to do. In fact, I'm one of these people who haven't really gotten into any of the Bond films since they rebooted the Daniel Craig. I feel like I'm in the minority there.
Sure.
But this film is streaks ahead of what the Bond franchise has produced in recent times.
Mission Impossible Rogue Nation is the film we're talking about. Tom Cruise is clearly he's both producer and central star as well. Interested, though, the Going Clear documentary really demanded some public rebuttals from Tom Cruise as the most high-profile person who's had a significant association with the Church of Scientology. So in that vein, films that you loved, because I think Josh and I were pretty impressed by this as a bit of popcorn tentpole cinema. It's pretty good. Films whose main, you know, the person at the centre of them has done maybe some questionable things, things you'd like some answers on, however you love their work. 1300-222-774 is the phone number. Just a few texts. I'm not keen on Mel Gibson, but I like Braveheart and Mad Max. That's from Colin and Q. I tell you what, the biggest example of Mel Gibson, because he's really got some horrifically questionable beliefs, but his Hamlet is extraordinary.
Yeah, I'm really impressed by Glenn Close as well. She's great in that.
Yeah. Someone else saying, I feel that way about Julia Roberts. I love her movies, especially Pretty Woman, but I'm not a fan of her off-screen persona. I'm not actually that familiar with her off-screen persona. And someone else saying, it sounds like the Mission Impossible film stolen its plot from any episode of Top Gear. Kind of, Doug. There are parts. But then every single action flick steals something from the sorts of fantasies that keep a show like Top Gear alive. The other point, Christopher McQuarrie, who directs this, just a bit of trivia, he wrote Usual Suspects. He wrote that screenplay, which I just think that's actually the reason I went to see the film. Because I thought, oh, well, if you've come up with Usual Suspects as a screenplay, there's got to be something going on.
And there's some tightness in the writing here. I think that shines through. I mean, Usual Suspects is still a wonderful film. It hasn't aged at all badly. It's a really striking film, directed by Bryan Singer. And McQuarrie seems to have taken Tom Cruise as his muse, both in directing and writing. His previous film was Jack Reacher, which was another type of agent espionage film. That was all right. It wasn't as good as Rogue Nation. But he's also written the scripts for Valkyrie, which was that Tom Cruise pretending he's the German officer attempting to assassinate Hitler.
Yep.
And also Edge of Tomorrow, which we looked at last year, sort of a sci-fi concept film, which was also good. But it is strange to have a writer and now a director who's sort of taken it on himself, or at least the studios have, to sort of write for this particular actor.
Look, 1300 222 774. If you've got an actor who, or a director, Woody Allen said some interesting things overnight about some really weird, some really quite disturbing stuff, to be honest, about Mia Farrow finding. And if you've got family around, this might not be the easiest conversation to explain to the younger members of the family. However, finding naked photos, Mia Farrow finding naked photos of the 19-year-old, then 19-year-old woman who is now Woody Allen's partner, who was then Mia Farrow's adopted daughter. There's some really problematic areas there. However, I know a lot of people love Woody Allen films. I wonder if you can separate them. Someone texting in as well, Charlton Heston, Moses, but he's also the head of the NRA. Indeed. Someone else saying, I'm not keen on Jesus, but he's been in some wonderful films. There's so many different places I could take that, but it's a good observation. And one more thing about the film, Josh. I have no idea if it's one of the reasons the film's a little better than the others. It's got quite a light mood. There's a few jokes. J.J. Abrams, the guy responsible for the Star Trek reboots and who is making the Star Wars, the new Star Wars film, he's a producer. It's quite light. I mean, it's got, they're trying to do, I know it's, I mean, they basically are convening with the Marvel superhero films. They've got that sort of, oh, it's all breaking down the fourth wall, this is all a bit funny moment. So that kind of helps, doesn't it?
And it helps having an actor like Simon Pegg, who brings some pretty decent comic chops to that. Yeah. But what impressed me about the use of comedy in this film, the tongue is definitely in the cheek, but not to the point of self-parody. It doesn't play for camp laughs, in the way we've seen a lot of films have kind of gone to that extreme. And I think that's a delicate balance that the film manages to pull off. It doesn't insult the audience. It's like, you know, we know that this is pretty ridiculous, but we're not going to emphasise the point.
Yeah. Now, look, it's, if you're after tentpole action, it's kind of the thing. Someone else, Anna, pointing out Clint Eastwood, conservative Republican, which I can't stand, but I loved him in Gran Torino, and I think he's a great director. Yeah, I think his political views actually intersect the most with Unforgiven.
Or American Sniper.
Ah, well. Yeah, that's what we had that chat. Yes. Look, we'll get to your calls in a moment. Also, Josh has got a few things to keep your eye out for at the Melbourne International Film Festival.
On 774 ABC Melbourne, you're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Josh Nelson is with me. We've been talking about Mission Impossible Rogue Nation. Someone texting, has Mission Impossible delivered on Mission Impossible and made the Mission Impossible franchise entertaining? Well, Josh and I are not always your ultimate tentpole audience. However, we both liked it more than the other ones.
We certainly did.
For what that's worth. Let's give a few recommendations at the Melbourne International Film Festival, Josh. We've got a little bit of sound from them as well, but what do you want to throw in front of people's attention?
Yeah, look, I think this week I'll kick off with a few films that if you miss them at the festival, you're probably not going to see them theatrically, or they're not going to appear on a screen anytime soon. And one of the highlights, which I actually have seen, is a film called Human Highway. Now, this is the director's cut. This is screening as part of the Masters and Restoration. This is a film made in 1982, directed by Neil Young, the musician, under the pseudonym Bernard Shakey.
Right.
And it's pretty out there, sort of fair. This is a film set in a almost post-apocalyptic America. It's been irradiated, and it's set at a highway diner / auto shop. And we have cameos from everyone, from Neil Young playing a nerdy mechanic, Dennis Hopper's playing the chef. We've got Dean Stockwell in there as well.
Right.
And Devo. Devo make an appearance as a nuclear cleanup team and randomly break into song.
Yep.
This is wonderful. And you can start to see perhaps that this was laying the seeds for not only very much the MTV music aesthetic, like it's all set on these sort of hyperreal sets. It's nothing is shot on location. It's all indoors. Almost like a hyperreal.
What's this,
sitcom?
Early 80s?
1982, and this has been sort of buried. It's been quite a rare collectible, and it's finally been recut, and I think 5 or 6 minutes shaved off it, and it's playing now on the big screen.
And that's Human Highway.
Human Highway. So many of those actors I mentioned are part of the David Lynch alumni. So yeah, it has a Lynch aesthetic in Lynch's early sort of playful.
And he's like directed by Neil Young.
Directed by Neil Young as Bernard Shakey. Bit of the cult classic. I think that will have a certain appeal.
I like this text, by the way. I have this one the other way around. I enjoy seeing Keira Knightley in interviews, but I can't stand her in films. That's from R in Heidelberg. That's quite funny. Sorry, another one?
Yeah, this will segue nicely. I mentioned Dennis Hopper. Dennis Hopper is in a film called Mad Dog Morgan, which I think we mentioned a few weeks ago, which if you haven't seen recently is pretty damn great. And the reason it's showing at the festival this time around is because of the David Goldblill retrospective. There's a full retrospective of his films, and at the centre of that is a new documentary called Another Country, which looks at his personal life and his work in the arts. And if you haven't seen Mad Dog Morgan before, I think it would look great on a big screen. They're all filmed filming in 35mm, if that's right. something that appeals to you, like it does to me.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, this is a really important retrospective, I think. This is a really kind of key one. I think they've had some interesting retrospectives over the years.
Mad Dog Morgan is like, because I want to bring people some news before we get to the weather, but... What sort of film is it?
Well, if you remember, during the mid-70s, there was that raft of films about bushrangers. So Morgan was based on a real bushranger, in the shadow of Ned Kelly.
Yep.
And it's a film in which he's basically kind of this sort of roguish figure and then decides to fight against the system, very much like in a similar way to Ned Kelly. But the film, directed by Philip Mora, has this strange multicultural vibe, which is really contemporary, or it feels really right. contemporary now, because we have this strange mixing pot of the sort of the British colonial influence, the indigenous character played by David Goldpalil. It's a really fascinating look at Australia through 1970s culture with Dennis Hopper as this Australian bushranger.
Crazy. Okay, we'll talk more about that retrospective next week. Josh, thank you.
Pleasure.
The two of the films Josh mentioned from the film festival, Human Highway and Mad Dog Morgan, the bushranger one, part of the Goldpalil retrospective, there at the festival. MI Rogue Nation, of course, is the Tom Cruise flick that we were speaking about.